What is it good for?
Good afternoon. You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, streaming live at WPKN.org. The name of the show is In Context, WPKN's live political call-in show. My name is Ken McDermott-Rowe. I'm here with my co-host, Gus Cantavero.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
And behind the board doing a double duty is our engineer and war commentator, Marshawn McDermott-Rowe.
Afternoon, folks.
In Context is on Mondays between noon and 1 p.m. on every Monday except the first Monday of the month. And please visit us at our website, incontextreport.com, where we have our blog and announcements regarding upcoming shows and archives of all of our shows. In addition, we now have, we're on the TV, we're on the YouTube, right, Gus?
Well, we're on your computer monitor. Yeah, we have a YouTube channel, which we are rapidly filling with new content and old content as well. And we have a weekly show that we're doing called the Liberty News and War Report. And is this the microphone that only gives you one channel or what?
Yeah.
He's only got one mic, so I have to use this one.
Okay. Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Everybody out there, turn your radios to mono. So that so we have the Liberty News and War Report, which we're doing every week. And we're cutting it up into two segments. We have a 12-minute and 13-14-minute segment. So they're found individually. So go to YouTube and search for In Context Report. Subscribe to our channel, and you'll be able to see our reports every week, complete with graphs and the news articles that we're reading. And we have a big HD TV behind us where we're showing everything as we do it and talk about it. It looks pretty cool, right?
It's very interactive.
Yeah. Very professional.
So send us emails and comment on the videos, and we'll be sure to read those live and comment and answer your questions.
And we'll be answering questions today, and if you want to email us any questions during the show, you can do so at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. We'll be giving out our phone number in just a minute. Before I talk about our upcoming shows, I just want to mention that we want to thank our listeners for their generous support during the recent WPKN fund drive.
Yes.
We broke through a $50,000 goal, and we are very, very appreciative for your support. It keeps us on the air. We're staffed almost entirely by volunteers. We have one full-time employee. So the money that you have given to PKN will go to essential costs like paying for our tower, paying for the electricity and the telephones and all the things that are absolutely necessary to keep the station on the air. So thank you so much for your generosity. And we especially appreciate it and in context because our goal here is to cover important news stories that are ignored by the corporate media. So, for example, we did show on the alternative cancer treatments, non-toxic cancer treatments, a subject that's pretty much blacked out in the mainstream media. We did a show on the privatization of water supply and show how we're being conned by big, large corporations into buying a bottled water when we should be focusing on our own free water right here in our municipalities. And a show we're going to have coming up on March the 12th should be of great interest in this regard, and that is going to be on psychiatric drugs with Dr. Peter Bregan, who is the author of A Medication Madness, where he traces the role of psychiatric drugs in cases of violence and suicide. We were hoping to have him on today, but he's going to be on March the 12th, a Monday at noon. And, of course, next week we have our regular monthly war report, where Marshawn McDermott-Rowe reviews the global war situation, the developments on kind of military level, but also we look at the geopolitical analysis in a comprehensive way that you're not getting in the corporate media. Today we'd like to take a look at two stories which we feel connect our national interest to the community issues, stories which really go to the question of whether we in Connecticut can recover powers, a lot of powers that we've lost over the years to the central government. And one of these issues was raised by former Senator Rick Santorum, of course, one of the leading Republican candidates, candidates for the Republican nomination for president. And And when we discuss Senator Santorum's views, please be advised, we don't endorse Senator Santorum. We're, in fact, a very big critic of Senator Santorum's.
Very much so.
And the Republicans generally, we criticize President Obama and the Democrats. So we're a nonpartisan group. But he raised an idea which we, Gus and I, thought was extremely interesting recently in a campaign speech in Columbus, Ohio, about the role of the federal government in education. And he feels that the federal government has no role to play in the education of our children, and that this is a matter that should be left first to the family and then to local communities. He's really not too keen on having the state run your school system. He would like to see a very locally based school system. And in his speech, he hearkened back to the way our presidents were homeschooled, for example, the way people were taught before the turn of the last century, before 1900. He said that most presidents in the first 150 years of the United States homeschooled their children and the White House. And he looks at our present school system as really the product of industrialization, and that it's not the best system to educate our children. And it's interesting that a Republican should criticize the industrialization of the school system, because it was big business that, as we learned during a show we did with John Taylor Gatto, which is on our website, called Dumbing Us Down. It was really the big corporations who industrialized American education to its detriment, and their agenda was to produce obedient workers, compliant citizens, and not really to bring out, and was not to bring out the best in our children. And so it's very interesting we find ourselves in Senator, sympathetic to this idea that Senator Santorum has broached. What do you think, Gus?
Yeah, it's interesting that he mentions these things, because he typically takes the side of the people, or tries to sound like a populist, where he's for states' rights and all that sort of stuff. But then when he's really pushed on it, it's all about the federal government, it's all about big government, it's all about the industry, the corporations. So I find this to be kind of a contradiction, or at least maybe this is what he really believes, but then he's actually selling out the rest of the time.
Either way, it doesn't really make him look good. It's very ironic, and this is, of course, a subject that Ron Paul has talked about.
It's actually on Ron Paul's website as one of his platform stances for his platform, is to be a pro-homeschooling candidate, returning the control of the schools to the local municipalities, to the states. Because it's something where, and in case you're listening out there and you have no idea why this is important or why it's necessary or why it's beneficial, the Federal Department of Education hasn't been around until, or didn't come to be until 1960, was it 68 or 69? Ken is in the middle of something. He's my fact checker. But the Federal Department of Education hasn't been around for more than, say, 35 years or so. And ever since it came into existence, our education has taken a nosedive.
Came in under Carter? That was
okay,
the deal.
Carter.
When he was running against Teddy Kennedy.
So 1976.
In 1980, in the primaries, I believe it was, when he's running for re-election, he really needed to shore up his support against Teddy Kennedy. It would make a very strong challenge. So he got the NEA on his side, mm-hmm. by endorsing the Department of Education, mm-hmm. creation. And I believe 1 in 5 Carter delegates at the convention that he was renominated, barely over Kennedy, were members of the teachers union.
And how has it actually helped us since we've had it? You know, we've had all these agencies. Carter created also the Department of Energy, and we are even more energy dependent on other countries now. We are less energy independent. Energy is 10 times more expensive than it was then. And education has only gone down. So whenever you centralize power and authority, you get a decrease in quality almost every single time, because corruption always goes towards the source of power. There is no way that the Federal Department of Education is going to be able to tell your local community in your part of the country the best way to educate your students and what curriculum is right for you, when they are trying to average things out for the entire nation. There's no way. There's just impossible.
What do you think? We'd like to hear, listeners, what you think about Senator Santorum's remarks, and about whether we should be moving in the direction of decentralizing our education, by calling us at 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. 9756. You're listening to In Context. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero, and with Marshawn McDermott Rowe. And we're talking about the decentralization of education, about local control of schools, about whether the federal government really has any role in the education at the elementary and secondary school level. So give us a ring, or if you prefer, I know some people rather not speak on the air, you can drop us in an email giving us your question or comment to ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org.
And, you know, one of the, I have a lot of issues with the education system. And I live in Greenwich, and you know, my son is in the high school. And we end up having these discussions all the time because he comes home to tell us about these special presentations that he's had to sit through. And it's all this, like, corporate worship stuff. You know, they have, we were, I was going to bring up with our guest, Dr. Bregan, today, who we, who unfortunately got sick and had to cancel, but he had to watch a show, a movie called More Than Sad, and it was all about pushing psychiatric medication for depression. And then, you know, they have these mandated speeches by the policemen who come in and to basically say that the students have no rights and that they can be searched any time by a policeman and that, you know, the dogs can come up to them any time and sniff them and that they can break into their cars at any time. And
they were told this in school?
In school by you know, the policemen who came from the Greenwich Police Department. And, you know, this is something that goes on all around the country because – this is a mandate from the Federal Department of Education. By giving them this kind of authority, they can, from the top down, instruct your local school municipalities that you have to have so many hours of instruction with this kind of material, and you have things like No Child Left Behind, which is a complete disaster in every aspect, and everybody hates it. It's done nothing but hurt us and take away valuable time from the classroom to extend towards these standardized tests, which are the lowest possible common denominator, so that inner schools and the southern schools who have difficult times achieving certain standards are able to pass them. So it's a waste of time for all higher level, you know, areas that don't have these kind of difficulties for funding and so forth.
And you end up with teachers who just teach to the test.
Yeah, exactly. They're basically just giving the answers. So you spend half the year just learning answers to a test that you're going to take, and you already have very few hours of productivity in a day of school. I mean, I worked it out so that my son only actually does 2.5 hours of work when he's at school, and he's there for 8 or 9 hours. By the time he has to get up at 6 a.m, catches a 6:50 bus, and he doesn't even start school until 1.5 hours later. And it's all going from class to class, and then you roll call and handing out homework and corrections. By the time they get to it, it's like 15 or 20 minutes of actual work in each class.
Yeah, it's a, well, you know, when you consider it, really is a factory model. And this model is not surprising when you consider the origins of our educational system. You know, I think we tend to think, oh, the public school system, the way it is today, that's the way it always was. It came down,
yeah, right,
you know, as the 11th commandment. But in fact, it was imposed on Americans.
The 15.
In the late 19th and early 20th century. And for the first century, we didn't have a system like that. It wasn't, the story starts in the 1840s in Massachusetts, when a Massachusetts industrialist became enamored of the Prussian school system. And they thought, wow, this system of compulsory schooling, which the Prussians adopted after the Napoleonic War. And they adopted it because they had lost battles to the French, and the leadership, the intellectual leadership in Prussia said, we need a school system that's compulsory that will make obedient soldiers and workers. And that's why they created it. And the industrialists in Massachusetts said, great idea, let's bring it here. So they got this. Now everybody's heard of Horace Mann. They go, oh, Horace Mann was a great educator. No. He was a state senator in Massachusetts, and these industrials went to him and said, look, you help us put this over, and we'll put you in Congress. So they sent Horace Mann over to Prussia to do a report on the Prussian school system. He didn't get there in time. Do we have a phone call?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, he let him.
Okay,
yeah.
So he got there in time. Well, good.
This is a good story.
So he didn't get to Prussia in time to study the school system, but that didn't matter. He came back to Massachusetts, and he gave this glowing report that the Prussian school system was the greatest thing since sliced bread. The governor and the legislature.
At least the summer vacation is.
It was about 1845, 1850. They put it through, and that's how the first compulsory school system. And they enforced it in Massachusetts at the point of bayonets. And one of the unknown, a very little told untold stories in American history. It's how from the middle 19th century to the early 20th century, it took 70 years to impose the system of compulsory education in the various states of this country. And sometimes it was done at gunpoint.
And parents didn't want to send their kids because they knew that sending their kids off to a school that they had no control over was a secret to indoctrination. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were immigrants from other oppressive countries, and they knew
that
you send your kids to get educated by the government, and you had no idea
there were
what
riots,
they were going to be learning.
In New York City against it.
And that's why we have compulsory education law, truancy laws,
which
is a crime, right?
That's right. And I believe we have a caller, Marshawn?
Yes, this is Sarah from New Haven.
Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Is that the...
That's Channel 10.
It is Channel 10. Thank you, Channel 10.
Hello, Sarah. Can you hear us now?
Can you get her on 11?
Not 9.
9.
Yeah. Can you hear us?
Sarah, are you there?
Did she maybe hang up?
No, I put her through.
Okay.
Hello?
All right, well, call back.
Yeah, Sarah, we had this little technical glitch here. This is live radio. So if you'd please call back, and we'll put you through.
Alrighty.
Put you through on the air. But this part of our history has been completely blacked out. This long, torturous process by which it was imposed. Now, early on in the process, the industrialists, and I'm thinking Carnegie and Rockefeller in particular, they got control of, because they said, this is great. This system is going to allow us to indoctrinate people to be good factory workers. So they established institutions like Teachers College in Columbia, highly regarded school of education, and to indoctrinate people in their new way of thinking. And they, what are we doing? Do we have Sarah back on maybe?
Try. Channel 9.
Hello, Sarah, you're there now?
Hello, is anybody there? Speak. If you're on the phone, speak. All right, cool. Okay. This is a great...
I don't know if any of our listeners have happened to have seen the movie Good Morning Vietnam, but if you look at the board in the movie Good Morning Vietnam, it's pretty much the same setup we have here.
What's going on there?
I have her through. It's just...
Well, while you guys troubleshoot, I'll continue this discussion. The Andrew Carnegie wanted to...
Hello, are you on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, Sarah, that was my bad. That was...
Oh, dynamite. Okay, Sarah, you're on the air at WPKN in contact. We were talking about education, and would you have a question or comment you can share with us?
Yes. I think that students are drugged up too much. However, I am a person who takes psychiatric medication, and it works. It's very powerful, and my life would not be the same without it. Okay? So some are good, actually,
yes,
believe it or not.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks very much, Sarah, for calling.
Let that speak for itself.
And we've been talking about Senator Rick Santorum has made a recent remarks in Columbus, Ohio, about the fact that he feels that the federal government plays too great a role. In fact, should not play a role in education at the elementary and secondary level. He feels maybe even the state government should. He believes that it should be community-based education and that homeschooling should play an important role in it. And I was just talking with Gus about how our system got started out of the Prussian model imposed on us by industrialists in a program which was quickly taken over not by from the Massachusetts industrialists, taken over by John D. Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie, who they really saw it as very useful to them. And Carnegie developed a system also for college, which was created the departmentalization process. The idea was college is a factory too, and we want to produce so many credits of this and so many credits of that.
You know the slogan for the Carnegie Foundation?
What is that?
Doing real and permanent good.
Okay. Well, they should characterize themselves.
I don't know good by what standard, but
so they created this endowment fund for pensions for college professors, and your college would get to participate in it only if they adopted the Carnegie curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So through the places like the Carnegie curriculum, this endowment fund, always Teachers College. They also endowed important chairs at places like Stanford, leading school of education, and they, they would put out, I would say, propaganda, put out a theoretical foundation for compulsory schooling. And the idea, as one of these scholars said, every day the child belongs less and less to his family and more to us, meaning mm-hmm. the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole thrust of it. And that's where we are today. And I think it has ramifications not just for the quality of education, but for also the quality of our civic life at the local and the national level.
Yeah, and you also see the incrementalism of the degradation of education. You know, you see like when you were a kid, you know, the kind of math that you were doing, the kind of critical thinking and the reading that you were doing, compare that to today and your average, you know, math and reading assignment is nothing like what you were doing.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Most kids today can't even use punctuation.
Yeah. The highest literacy rate could have been at the time of the American Revolution. I mean, it's incredible.
Today, our highest literacy rate is like eighth grade. And that's actually what the president's speeches are. And they're scientifically, you know, written so that most people can understand them. And so Obama's speeches are the lowest grade level average if you just use the number of syllables and the words and how long the sentences are, the complex ideas being conveyed. Obama's speeches are the lowest grade level of any president yet, and it's an eighth grade level.
And you compare that to the discourse that say, oh, do we have a phone call?
Yes, we have a call. It's Randy from Southington. Go ahead, Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Randy, thanks for calling. You're on the air. Randy?
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. It's a very interesting discussion, but I really find it kind of frustrating because I think that, in a way, it's very almost guaranteed to lead to the downfall of America on the world stage because mm-hmm. education is the only thing that will enable us to remain competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And advocating a return to decentralized, widespread homeschooling where there can be no assurances of standards and no, if we want to take the content portion away from the centralization, then how do you know what anyone's doing?
Well, I don't know that Rick Santorum wanted everybody to be homeschooled.
Yeah.
I think he had homeschooled some of his kids, but I don't think he's advocating that for everybody.
Yeah, nor are we.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not right for everybody. I was homeschooled myself.
If you look online, if you just search for homeschool, you quickly find that most homeschoolers are doing it not out of dissatisfaction with their education system, but for religious reasons.
Well, it depends what part of the country you're in. Some it's for religious reasons. I know in New York City I knew a lot of homeschoolers, and none of them did it for religious reasons.
Around here, it's purely for education.
For here, in the Northeast, it tends more to be for for the idea that you want a child-centered education. But I think one of the points I understand is a very important point, which is, can you have good quality education without somebody, some outsider setting the standards, saying we want you to cover X, Y, and Z?
And it's
curriculum.
A perfect question because it's the next step in the conversation. You know, first we point out the flaws in the education system. Second, you have to point out how a decentralized education can be better. Now, we only had the Department of Education for 30 years. So what did we do 40 years ago? You know, we still had public education, but it was just tailored to the region. So state by state, they would try things, they would come up with better ways of doing things, and then they would catch on in other states. And then you would experiment, and then it would fail, and then other states wouldn't do that because it failed. So if Mississippi does something, Arkansas will see that it didn't work and they won't do it. You know, that for an example. Does that make sense to you, caller?
Yes, you know, it does, but I think that the time frames involved are so damn long and the technology and amount of content that we're able to achieve now is changing so rapidly
mm-hmm.
that I don't see how you could keep up with that.
All right, well, put it this way. If the federal Department of Education makes a mistake, all 50 states sink at the same speed. Does that make you feel any more comfortable?
Yeah, I hear you. I look around at the legislation that's being proffered in many of these states that you mentioned where, oh, we're going to teach creationism as a theory. Give me a break. This is just utter nonsense. I mean, you're entitled to your own opinions. You are not entitled to your own facts.
I guess that once you put your child in the compulsory schooling setting, then you are subjecting yourself to somebody else deciding, what's important to learn. And one of the points that John Taylor Legato makes in his book, Dumbing Us Down, is that the system that seemed to work the best is one where the child was picking what he studied. And it seems, you know, we've been taught that, well, you know, some expert, some guy wearing the hat, I like to say, has got to tell us what to do. But Gatto points, I don't know if you're familiar with his book, Dumbing Us Down, or The Underground History of American Education, but he looked at Ben Franklin as the model for how to do education. This was a model that was pursued in colonial America up until the turn of the century. And he was only in school for maybe a year, and Gatto said he was just too rambunctious, so he just left. And his way of schooling was, if he wanted to study science, he thought of an experiment. And he didn't do what's called cookbook science. He went out and tried to figure out something.
Yeah.
And maybe he did and maybe he didn't.
Put a key on a kite and fly it in a lightning storm.
Or if he wanted to learn how to write, he would get together with the friends of his and they would practice writing in the style of, say, Ernest Hemingway, what we would do today. And then the guy who mastered that would be the good writer. So they would do it together. I'm sorry, go ahead, Marcia.
And I think in there lies one of the problems with our sort of factory-style education system is the fact that everybody learns at a different rate and everybody learns in a different style and everybody's fundamentally interested in different things. So, for example, I mean, I personally have no aptitude at math whatsoever. I can tell you what kind of plane was flown during the Second World War by Germany, France, Japan, and all the rest of it, but if you ask me to do algebra, my head explodes. And, you know, in the standard education system, that would be classed as somebody who had a learning disorder. But I would have spent all my time on remedial math, exactly, instead of studying something that I might be inherently good at.
So, Carl, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm just very interested. I mean, I'm a parent of a gifted 10-year-old in Southington, and also recently adopted a little boy from Ethiopia. So watching, not having had access to him at such a young age, it's interesting to watch him come along through the education system and see how he's catching up I don't think we could do it without without a solid education system. I think that even though my wife and I are very talented, very well educated, far more so than the average, and have far more resources at our disposal than the median household, I still think it would be extremely hard to do without a good support system. And you know, you throw out an example like Ben Franklin. This is one person in a million. You know, I'm sorry, but I go to the grocery store and I look around and I listen to the things that people are saying, how the average person talks and thinks.
You know, you actually sound like the perfect homeschooling parent, to be honest, because you are willing to be open-minded. You would be shocked as to how good of an education a child can get from a parent who is just open-minded. My mother has a GED. And I basically educated myself because she gave me the leeway to be able to study what I wanted to study. And I spent all of my time reading history textbooks and biographies and writing and pursuing art. And it didn't slow me down at all. In fact, it gave me the opportunity to study three times as long as I wanted to, as a normal student would study.
Yeah, I think there's a valid case to be made for that. If you've got smart parents and you've got a smart kid with promise and who's willing to work, and you've got the resources, and you're willing to make the sacrifices that it takes, and a lot of people can't do that with two parents working.
That's right. It's a real logistical problem.
It is. Absolutely. And I think that's one of the big problems with our society now is that we have two parents working. Kids have to go to school. And caller, thank you very much. We have to move on.
Thank you very much, caller.
Thank you.
We no longer have the ability to spend the time nurturing our children's personal needs and interests. Who's next?
This is Joan from Trumbull.
Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling. You're on In Context.
Hello. I'm very glad to hear you speaking about education. I'm a retired teacher, and I've taught all the way through. I have a PhD. I took elementary and junior and school and college.
Lovely.
And I just wanted to say it's great you're talking about this.
Okay.
And I'm with those people who say that public education is what we've got. I mean, the aristocracy in previous centuries had tutors, private tutors for their children.
Uh-huh.
Those of us who are affluent can get a private tutor, but we also need to support a system that teaches everyone.
What do you think about the federal central education rather than state education?
Well, most countries that have good systems have certain level of federal control over their local areas because mm-hmm. obviously they need it. You look at countries that are way ahead of us in every other subject, mm-hmm. there is a federal system, and the teachers are subjected to nationally controlled exams. And this too, this also may not be perfect in every way. However, a combination of the two is very necessary. We have fallen behind because there is no control.
Now, Joan, since the Department of Education was established around 1980, has the federal involvement improved education?
Of course. It has. There are imperfections. We cannot ask for a perfect system, especially under the mentality of the public controls to a certain extent the system. The British mentality is educate the elite. They've got brilliant scientists. They have this and that. A lot of them come here. A lot of them win Nobel Prizes here. We had at least an idea of educating the middle and educating everybody, mm-hmm. which, of course, is extremely expensive. However, the possibility for people to go through that system and become able to a certain extent is the virtue of our system. However, it isn't going to happen in a rural area that has no money, no books, no paper, no nothing, or an inner-city school where you can't cross the schoolyard without getting shot. I mean, obviously, these things require the intervention of a federal government. But, you know, at federal government and central control, if not control in the sense of propaganda and prescribed curriculum, at least an intervention to assist, as they did under Johnson, as they did when I was teaching.
Okay, so how do you explain, if education's gotten better with the Federal Department of Education leading everything, that we've gone from first to 25th in math and we've gone from first to 15th in English in the world?
I think there are social problems in this country, such as the defunding of state education systems, et cetera.
We spend more money than ever.
I'm sure we do. We also do on medical care. It isn't,
and we're getting sicker.
Any good.
Yeah.
Because, however, obviously, the education system in the United States is local, but and when Johnson came in with these programs tried to do something. We know what the fact that they didn't particularly work has various explanations in various areas. The fact that they were wrong in conception, I don't feel is true.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
There's something, though, that I'm sorry, I didn't want to get on the subject. I just wanted to say one thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure this is the appropriate venue. However, I have recently called my local high school where my children went.
Mm-hmm.
They are now grown up. They do not answer the phone. Apparently, they have cut phone systems, and you cannot get to a local high school of over 1,000 children during working hours.
That's,
given the fact that they are now shooting up and blowing up certain high schools, as in Columbine, I feel that the minimum thing that high schools and schools should do is protect the safety.
But you see, when you have federal control, they're not beholden to you. They don't care what the parents
think.
Well,
I don't think we have federal control in the Trumbull school system.
You do.
I wouldn't call it control. I think
and if
it's paid for with local taxes. I pay my taxes for here.
Yeah, your phone call should get answered. Let's put it that way.
So much, yes.
It's outrageous.
I absolutely feel that the safety of the students is a relevant preoccupation, and I could not believe the fact that they do not. I guess that they're relying on call. What do you call it, cell phones for to get to their children during the day? But
yeah.
There are emergencies. I think when you talk about a factory school system, I agree with you. But the factory, I think, should answer the phone. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much. Thank you very much,
Jones. She had a lot to say. That's good, though.
One of the things I think is interesting.
Can I just give out the phone number one more time? It's 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756 to join the conversation here on In Context with the guests, Gus, Ken, and Marchand, about the role of the federal government in our school system. Should it be reduced? Should we move more towards a locally based school system, including homeschooling?
One of the things I think is interesting is, you know, they talk about not answering the phone. I was doing some research on school emergency procedures in the event of mostly how it connected to Homeland Security, but in the event of a terrorist attack or a shooting or things like that. In the event of a terrorist attack, parents are not allowed, and this is a federal policy, parents
can't
are not allowed
to pick up the kids, right?
They're not allowed to go pick up the kids. So, in essence, they're not answering your phone call because they they are the parent. When the kid is there, they are the parent. They have authority over you and over the child. And I think because this isn't, you know, this isn't something new. This, since 9/11, Department of Homeland Security policies have been that in the event of an attack or a shooting or any sort of emergency, the school holds the kids, and the parents have no right whatsoever to have access to the kids. The police, the FBI, and Homeland Security do, but the parents don't.
Or how about like when they do, you know, army training drills around schools or something like that, and they don't even tell the parents doing it, and the kids just get scared to death, you know, and they do these lockdown drills sometimes, and now around here they tell you, we get these letters that say, you know, tomorrow we're going to have a lockdown drill or whatever, where we train all your kids to hide in a corner and become victims.
And the lockdown drill sounds so asinine, to be honest. I mean, okay, so some guy goes nuts with a gun, and I mean, I don't know, maybe this is just, you know, sort of common sense thinking, and, you know, maybe there's something wrong with me and that I use common sense. But I think that what logic is it that in the event some guy goes nuts with a gun and starts shooting up a school, you are to lock the door and hide in a corner? It only makes sense in the fact that it's a hell of a lot easier for him to shoot you.
Yeah, well, that's
if you're
what
all piled up in a corner, you just bah, bah, bah. You know, it's easy.
As we discuss it, I'm thinking, you know, we're a nation that's should be receptive to new ideas, and we like competition. Maybe what one of the diverse ways we should approach education is to encourage certainly home-based education as a possible alternative. And when I say that, I'm completely free of government control, and see how people do. And because I think one of the caller raised a point that he didn't see how it would be possible in today's modern society to educate people at home.
Well, I mean, charter schools, magnet schools, they always do better in certain areas. You know, like in the inner city, they always overachieve. They always do better than the public schools, the city schools. I mean, so I don't see how the Federal Department of Education has done a single thing to help us if we've dropped 20 points in our rankings.
I guess the proof is in the pudding. If you have a number of different approaches to education, and some kids are doing better than one or another, then I think it seems to me you should encourage that.
Yeah, do that.
You know,
if this works, do it. I mean, look. What do all the big corporations say? They want to hire, but there aren't anybody here with skills. I mean, I heard this story just a week ago in Connecticut. There are jobs here, but there aren't any students smart enough to take them.
But, you know, Americans are smart. Americans are really hard working.
But we don't have any job training. We don't have any useful skills. We know how to text and play video games.
Well, that's just it. And Americans, what made America great, what made Americans smart, I mean, look back to our heyday. You know, what made Americans great was the fact that we were individuals and we were ingenious. You could take somebody who fundamentally had no practical or traditional education in a specific field, but he wanted to go and learn how to, you know, be an electrician or invent the light bulb, I don't know, or the stove.
Or see a need and then design it.
Yeah, exactly, and just design it. Yeah. That's what made us great. But now we're taking on this Germanic system, and we look at the Chinese and we say, well, why are the Chinese getting ahead of us? We have to beat them at their own game. And the fact is, I think one of the things we have to realize is, do we really want
to
be like
the Chinese?
No one
is going to beat the Chinese at their own game.
Exactly.
I think that's
do we
a very
really
good
want
point.
That mass think?
Nobody gets in line better than the Chinese.
Exactly.
Right? We got to play to our strength.
Which is creativity,
individualism. We are not going to play the Chinese or the Japanese.
And what do you learn when you go to school? You learn to get in line, sit at your desk, sit at attention, pay attention, listen, write down the notes, take it home, remember it, bring it back and regurgitate it, and then go back in the hall and go to your next class. And there's nothing, it's all about going to meetings. What do you do at corporations? You go to your desk, you study, you pay attention,
exactly.
You regurgitate information to your
exactly.
officials, and you go to meetings about meetings.
And there's no coincidence to that similarity.
No
because
coincidence
the people
whatsoever.
Control the school system are corporate people. And are we happy with the way the corporation nurtures individualism?
No.
Clearly not. And when you're working for a big corporation, what do you worry about? How your boss feels about you, what your next quarterly review is going to look like.
Yeah.
And if you've got too many good ideas, you know what's going to be written on your job review, not a team.
Yeah,
right?
It's all about
right?
kicking downward and
kissing,
just, yeah,
kiss
kissing
up,
butt.
Kick down.
Well, and that's why, I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, people now only study, kids only study for the test nowadays and everything because, well, is it on the test? I mean, I cannot tell you how many people
study for the test. Yeah.
Study only for the test, but you'll ask them something very rudimentary. Like I had a friend of mine who
I don't know, that wasn't on the test.
Exactly. Yeah, something relatively like I had somebody once tell me that they thought Ireland was in the Middle East.
It's not.
You know, they went to a federally funded school, They had federal textbooks.
It's an I country.
The world's organized alphabetically.
That's right.
Israel, Ireland, West, right? Iran, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Iraq, they're all I countries.
You go America, Armenia.
But you know, I don't blame the students and I don't blame the teachers. I think the teachers are suffering under all these testing requirements. And I think the students, if you're being beaten down and given a lot of assignments every day, you're going to tune off once you hear this isn't on the test. Because you know you've got so much darn work to do.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. It hurts the teachers because it doesn't allow the teachers to really teach. They give teachers way too many students and this, you know, really insane curriculum. And the kids, meanwhile, have...
Yeah. Why is it that it's not a coincidence that smaller class sizes equals better grades? Okay? Yeah. There's not a coincidence. And there's a reason for that. Why? Because you have individual attention. You address the students' questions individually. You change the curriculum according to the students' interest. Well, that starts to sound a lot like homeschooling.
Exactly.
It's child-centered. Everybody wants child-centered because it's a great idea, right? Well, what's better child-centered than family-based education?
The only time mass...
But what's more efficient and cheap than a factory schooling where you have 75 kids just taking notes?
Exactly. Yeah. And the only time that kind of mass education system fundamentally works is if you have a society like China, where the Chinese have a group, sort of myopic group think. This is what is best. I mean, you know, during the Great Leap Forward, Mao said, all right, all the farmers are going to start manufacturing steel. And in the West, we would have gone, okay, well, you know, okay, he says, all right, we're going to get a few people to manufacture steel. Some people are going to continue to grow food. In China, everybody stopped growing food. And 20, I swear, look it up. It's
20 million.
It's that 20 million people died.
Wasn't enough food.
Exactly. All because, but Americans, we don't do this group thing. We can't. It's not our strength, and we're never going to beat the Chinese.
What do you think? We'd like to hear your views on American education by calling 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. The name of the show is In Context.
Are you checking the email?
Yep.
WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Streaming live at WPKN.org. This In Context is on every Monday from noon to 1, except the first Monday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And we also like to again thank our listeners for their very generous support during the recent fund drive. We broke through our $50,000 fundraising goal, and thank you so much for keeping us on the air.
Remember to also find us on Facebook, search In Context, and you can comment on all articles, and we'll relay your comments on the air. And try to find our Facebook or our YouTube channel by searching In Context Report. And every week we have a new episode of the In Context Liberty and War Report, where we summarize some of the biggest headlines and try to make everything very succinct and easy to follow along with our complete with diagrams and charts and articles behind us on a big HD screen so everyone can find them themselves. Prove we're not making anything up.
That's right.
We embellish, but we don't make it up.
That's right. Some of the stuff is too crazy to make up.
I know. I couldn't make this up if I tried. So we have another caller.
Yes, we do. This is Adam from Shelton.
Hi, Adam. You're on the air and In Context. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me. But what you guys were like kind of just talking about, I mean, leaning on the whole, you know, child, you know, choosing their curriculum, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what a Montessori school is, in a sense.
Very much so.
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe we need more of those.
I mean, that's just another example, like,
yeah.
If you look at, like, the homeschooling, like, you know, most people who homeschool don't get certified educators into their homes. So, it's...
No, but I think it also goes to show that you don't have to be a certified educator just to go to the library and study. Anybody has the capacity to be brilliant if you just don't hold them back.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, but, I mean, personally, I mean, as a, you know, a future educator, you know, I kind of, you know, think there should be certified educators if there is going to be homeschooling. Because, I mean, granted, there are going to be parents who can teach their kids and who can bring their kids up to the same level as, you know, kids who dedicated themselves to schooling, you know.
Adam, you're in college now or you're studying to be a teacher?
Graduate school at UB.
Okay, great.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. We wish you good luck with your career.
Yes, definitely.
Thanks.
All right, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks for calling, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Right, sure enough.
Mark?
And our next caller is Susan from Long Island. Go ahead, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Susan. It's Ken and Gus and Marshawn.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a high school teacher on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
And I've just been been listening to your program on the air. Just maybe a couple things. First of all, the schools on Long Island mostly went up in the 50s and 60s. They're falling apart.
Mm.
It's going to take a lot of money to fix up the schools structurally.
Yeah.
Right? That's number one.
Yeah, right.
Number two, I'm a science teacher. I spend, I would say, between $3,000 and $4,000 a year on paper, pens.
Whoa.
This is your personal money.
Science, of course. I mean,
whoa.
That's outrageous.
It's good money, but it takes a lot of money to run a science lab.
That's a lot of money.
But to think that you, the teacher in a public school, have to dig into your own pocket to pay for that. And Long Island, I know the Long Island government is not an inexpensive operation. The taxes there are pretty high, right?
Oh, of course they are. I guess I can tell you where the money's going.
Please tell us.
Where does the money go?
I mean, I make over $100,000 a year, but I work 16 hours a day on weekends. I mean, my boyfriend is always screaming at me, put the books away, stop grading. You know, they don't pay you to work 24 hours a day, but, you know, you really want to do a good job for the kids. But getting back to the money, they send us to these seminars to teach us to do all these amazing things in the classroom that we have no money to fund. You get back to the classroom, and it costs $1 a page for these giant pieces of paper. Oh, you're going to put giant pieces of paper up all around the classroom, and the kids are going to walk around and write on the paper, and they're going to be so excited and so happy. Those giant sheets of paper cost $1 a piece.
Well, let's...
Four classes a day times 8 pieces of paper a day is $32 a day to do this amazing instructional practice. You know, there isn't enough money to do the amazing things that everybody thinks we should be doing.
So what do you think? Now, it's unlikely there's going to be more money in this current economy. Housing prices haven't stopped falling. The federal government, whatever one thinks its role should be, has a $1.3 trillion estimated deficit this year. Let's assume that there's no more money going to come. How would you rearrange things to make it better?
Well, first of all, if I may.
Yeah.
The United States became great because we came into a pristine land, killed all the natives, and then stole everything. The water was free, the coal was free, the oil was free, the trees were free, the farmland was free, the beavers were free. Everything was free for about 200, 300, 400 years, whatever. And the bottom line is the free ride is over. Now we have to start tightening up, you know, as they say, tightening the belt, tightening the purse string. And Americans have to stop wasting money on garbage and put the money. I mean, look, you can either invest in schools or prisons. Take your pick.
Yeah, or wars.
Or worse, yeah. Or wars, yeah. That's
or
right.
Wars, right. Or yeah. Wars. Or wars.
Well, caller, we thank you very much for the call. We have to move on.
Yeah, thank you so
thank
much
you very
for
much.
Calling.
Our next caller is Jim Briggs from Bridgeport. Go ahead, Jim. You're on
hey,
the air.
Jim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I feel most basically ambivalent about what you're saying because some of it is right, but some of it I think is very wrong.
Uh-huh. Tell us.
Sure. Go ahead. So, what do you think?
I homeschool my daughter, and I think that's a great way to go.
Uh-huh.
But when you extol homeschooling, you're really talking about a very select population. You know, people who have parents motivated enough
mm-hmm.
to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a big sacrifice. I mean, you probably spend an enormous amount of time on that.
Yes, I did. It was a big sacrifice for both me and my wife. And, you know, we thought it was worth it, although we ended up sending my daughter to high school because there were so many resources there.
Okay.
You know.
So that's fine.
That's also an issue. But I must say that I don't think schools, if anything, when I was growing up, and now I'm quite an old guy, but we weren't taught critical thinking. In fact, one area in terms of increasing critical thinking is teaching phonics, because I had the see and say method, which raised a whole generation or many generations of people who couldn't spell.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of work with my daughter teaching her math concepts, which they don't do.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, to invoke Santorum and the Republican model that sees the American government as evil has led us, you know, not into a good place. I mean, let's face it. We got rid of the government pretty much, in the 20s, and we had a catastrophic financial crash. Then we had a Keynesian system that lasted up to the year 2000, and then we went to the Bush model, and again, crash.
But you have a point. The government does have an important role to play. And we look at this current economic depression, I would call it. A lot of it has to do with the failure of the government to act with respect, for example, to the regulation of derivatives.
Yeah, I mean, Hoover was an interventionist, and Bush, the bailouts, so he's a big government interventionist. There's no way you can say that that's getting rid of government.
Wait a minute. Bush, he got rid of regulations and all that kind of
thing. No. He selectively deregulated in favor of the big corporations.
That's right. Exactly.
That is not deregulating for small business.
The Republican method is. It's to use the government to enrich themselves.
No, that's the fascist method.
That's the same thing.
I think Jim has a very one of the important points I think Jim is making is that the Republicans aren't consistent, and what we've isolated Santorum's views on that, on education, but it really doesn't connect.
These are individuals. These aren't Republicans or Democrats. They're individuals.
But it doesn't connect
to
anything to the rest.
Trying to turn this country into a – remember –
No, we don't. We're not advocating Santorum. I don't know if you didn't hear the beginning of the show, but we're not advocating for Santorum. This is merely a topic to talk about.
Yeah, and he happened to raise the subject.
He talked about it, so we're talking about it.
Let me take that back because I didn't hear the whole story.
That's fine.
Sure.
But I would say that there are countries that don't have school systems,
yes,
and they don't do well.
Some, you know, I mean, it's all the individual. I mean, if I didn't have school, I actually was unschooled. I didn't study subject by subject. I studied what I wanted to learn, and I'm quite an intelligent individual. I'm probably the smartest person I talk to on a day-to-day basis.
I feel the same way, and I feel I'm self-educated too. Although I do have a college degree.
Okay, yeah, I do too. I do as well.
They do spoon feed you things.
Yes.
My daughter also, who was homeschooled, really hates the schools because they don't allow critical thinking. They just spoon feed you information. The question is it possible to teach? Mostly, I would like to teach, have people learn to think critically.
Yes.
And that's being sabotaged by our school system. The question is how would we get that done? I mean, homeschooling can do it.
Yes.
Like, you have to have people who can think critically themselves,
mm-hmm,
and who want to do it.
Yes. Dr. Charlotte Iserby, who was in the Reagan administration, she wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America.
Yes.
And, you know, she talks a lot about the ability to think critically. And this factory corporate education model that we've been kind of discussing here is not the right way to go. Yeah. I think that maybe reducing the number of classes in a day, make longer blocks so that you have more open discussion periods, might foster that kind of group, exchange of ideas, perhaps.
Perhaps. Unless, but, you know, one of our earlier callers suggested the homeschooling.
3 minutes.
That 3 minutes,
Ken.
Okay, no, that the Jim had did with his daughter,
yeah,
and is done by, I think, millions of people around the country today, is only applicable to a genius like Ben Franklin. And what do you think of that, Jim, that it's only really good?
I think you have to have people who really care and who are aware. But I met many homeschoolers, and the kids were so well behaved. They were so good to each other.
Yeah, right.
And they're just wonderful. And I think it's mostly just the ability to have be aware of, mm-hmm, what's really going on in the world.
So it comes down to family values, the family structure.
Yes.
More than it does. So, I mean, when we look at the modern day kids, what's the stereotype of the modern day kid? Disrespectful, disinterested, selfish, and unempathetic. And that is the more popular technology becomes, the more rapidly the trends and pop culture spread to make people less interested in society and less interested. It's like it's more cool to be stupid now than it is to know your rights and to be independent. You know, it's like everybody wants to just be texting, watching music videos, and it's awesome if you know all the stats about Tim Tebow and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, but you're an idiot if you know what's in the National Defense Authorization Act. You know, like you're an uncool dweeb. Well, anyway, we thank you very much for the call. We got to sign off
thanks
here.
Thanks so much for your call. Good luck to you and your daughter.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So that does it for our program today, right?
That is it.
We're done?
We have about another 30 seconds.
All right, let me plug the Facebook page again. You want to start up the theme song. So find us on Facebook, In Context Report, or just In Context, and comment on our stories. And find us on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel, In Context Report. Every week we do a new show, In Context, Liberty and War Report. And
our website is incontextreport.com.
That's right. So we're very active online, the social media and all that sort of stuff.
And we'll be here again next week where we have our monthly war report. And we will take a look at aspects of the global wars that you're not getting from the corporate media and insights into what the geopolitics behind
what's going on. Yeah, we're going to – and in this week's war report on our YouTube show, we're going to be talking about the developments in Syria and Iran and the war, the oil exchanges going on and all that difficult stuff. So tune in on our YouTube show this week and get some of the details that you're not being told in the mainstream media.
Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Have a good week, bye-bye, everyone. Bye.